This is Agriculture Today.
So obviously, ton of eyeballs on this, right? This is a really big event for the commodity markets.
Mike Castle is senior commodities economist with StoneX.
Kind of what we've seen is something very familiar, where we're getting these headlines that are whipsawing markets back and forth, kind of this, for lack of a better term, he said, she said kind of game. But a concise way to think about this summit is that the U.S. side has kind of presented it as a framework for renewed Chinese purchases of American goods, especially ag, right? Along with some market access and licensing concessions, that kind of thing.
Now, U.S. export inspections slowing for the week that ended May 14th. USDA said corn, soybeans, wheat all below the previous week. Now, for corn inspections, well ahead of the marketing year, USDA reporting year-to-date corn inspections, 2.3 billion bushels compared to 1.79 billion same time last year. Still not seeing China show up yet in those corn purchases. However, when it comes to soybeans, they are listed, taking about 7.5 million bushels out of the 17.8 million, which were inspected for the week. It was down from 24.4 million the prior week. China also listed taking the majority of sorghum as 5.6 inspected for export. China took 5.1. Wheat inspections, 8.2 million bushels down sharply from the 18.8 million the prior week, probably due in part to that run-up in prices of that previous week. Farm shippers soon will get more rail service visibility as the Surface Transportation Board adds two weekly reporting metrics for Class 1 railroads. The STB says railroads must begin reporting original estimated time of arrival and industry spot and pull data as of July 8th. The original estimated time of arrival will be used to measure whether manifest shipments arrive within 24 hours of the railroad's original estimate. Industry spot and pull will track local rail car placements and pickups, giving shippers more insight into service reliability. Now, for farmers, better data may not solve every local rail problem, but it can make service failures a little easier to document. Southern Plains wheat shippers have been facing higher rail fuel surcharges as hard red winter wheat production falls towards a near 70-year low. USDA's Grain Transportation Report says BNSF and Union Pacific made only modest tariff changes for the marketing year, but fuel costs are rising sharply. The biggest change, the fuel surcharge, USDA says BNSF's June surcharge will rise to 46 cents per mile. That's up from 8 cents last June. Union Pacific surcharge, 69 cents per mile. That's up from 30 cents. What's it mean? Well, USDA says from Wichita to Houston, fuel charges will equal $251 per car increase for Union Pacific, an additional $387 per car for BNSF. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
It's a bit of a weird setup.
Austin Goolsbee is an economist and president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago.
The FOMC table where they decide on the interest rates every 6 weeks, there's 19 policymakers sitting around the table. Seven of them are political appointees. They're governors in Washington. Jay Powell is the chair. And then there are 12 Reserve Banks presidents also sitting around the table. Those are not government agencies. They're not-for-profits. They have their own boards of directors. They design this system in a weird, kludgy way. The Speaker of the House was Champ Clark, was from Missouri, and the head of the Banking Committee in the Senate was also from Missouri. So two of the 12 banks are in Missouri. But that said, there was a stroke of genius in setting up the Fed the way they did, which is you get independent views from around the country. It's not just controlled by Washington, D.C., or Washington, D.C., plus the banks on Wall Street. And in 1913, when they created the Fed, people were very nervous about that, and they remain very nervous about that today. So we take every one of the Reserve Banks takes that independence quite seriously, and every one of the 19 people sitting around the table takes the job extremely seriously. It's you're out of the elections business, you're out of the partisan business. The law, the Federal Reserve Act law, says we are to think of two things and two things only when setting monetary policy. Stabilize prices, maximize employment. We call that the dual mandate, and that's kind of all you need to know of Fed 101. Everybody who comes there, they have different worldviews, but they're thinking about the economy when they're making that decision.
What are the other members of the FOMC saying?
My observation of the people sitting around the table is there are a lot of opinions expressed in public by a lot of people about what should happen. And I'm not allowed to speak. The rules say I'm only allowed to speak for myself. I'm not allowed to speak for the Fed or for anybody else. I will say for me, I try to pay attention to what the critiques are and figure out what the arguments and do I think they're right or not right. But there's nothing in the Federal Reserve Act that says make sure the stock market is happy. And there's nothing in the Federal Reserve Act that says make sure the president is happy or anybody else. It's all about stabilize the prices and maximize employment. So there's nothing wrong with the president or anyone else expressing an opinion or expressing an argument. If they're actively talking about taking away the independence of the FOMC, however, now that's a really bad idea. That is a recipe to have inflation come roaring back. And I would just ask anybody who thinks that we should have a system like that, just go look at countries that have had it. What happens? You know exactly what's going to happen, and people don't like it. I mean, we just spent several painful years trying to get inflation down, and people do not like inflation. So just be careful.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I'm going to answer the back half of that first and say absolutely it is something that's here to stay. And that by itself, I think, is really a good thing.
Don Close is Senior Protein Analyst with Terrain. So what's here to stay? Beef on dairy.
You know, for the majority of my career, and I'd say probably the majority of yours, the dairy industry and the beef industry, they just seem to coexist in separate silos, and never were those two to merge. We have or are in the process of fixing that. The other really positive attribute is that availability of additional feeder cattle came at a pristine, perfect time to provide available supply when our supply of cattle started to contract so aggressively. So that for that purpose, it's been a blessing. Then the first part of your question was, has it changed the industry? And clearly it has. And really the way it has is those calves really need to be handled and managed differently than a traditional beef calf. Certainly if you take the 5 to 10 years that they have been under development, the cattle feeders have become much more astute at how to manage those cattle. The point that we're trying to get to is, you know, historically, U.S. fed cattle roughly 120 days. That was been in the 70s, early 80s. That slowly graduated out to we were feeding cattle 160 to 180 days. We're now feeding cattle on average roughly 200 days. But if you incorporate the beef on dairy calves specifically, and a lot of those calves technically being placed on feed from day old calves, a lot of those animals are on feed for 365 to 400 days. So we have expanded the time window that we're monitoring that inventory of cattle on feed. And as we have expanded the timeline, it makes determining or projecting an estimate of what the available supply of market-ready cattle will be on any given month, it makes it a much bigger challenge. And that, excuse me, I think is a good explanation of why we're seeing not only the price levels we're at, but the big swings in prices we're seeing. It's both cattle feeding industry and the aggregate and packers trying to balance that available supply of market-ready cattle on a monthly basis.
We talk about rebuilding, but will we ever go back to what we used to have, or is this the new normal?
I don't know that I would want to categorize it as a new normal, but that's precisely what we've done. If you go back to the all-time peak in U.S. cattle numbers there in the 1974-75 area, every time we have gone through a liquidating phase in the market, once we start the rebuild, we never got back to where we were at the previous high on cattle numbers. At the very same time, if you look at the U.S. beef production over that same 50-60 year window, we continue to produce more beef with a smaller number of animals. We've done that with technology. We've done that with better feeding practices. But specifically, we've done it with genetics, is as the cattle have continued to get bigger, the total pounds of beef from that animal has been enough to compensate the decline we've seen in that head count. And that's going to be, I would have every expectation that will be the same going forward.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
China has not confirmed any of this, but that's not unusual. They rarely do confirm any type of agreements that come out.
Arlen Suderman is chief commodities economist at StoneX on the latest U.S.-China ag agreement.
I should state that the October agreement had, for the White House had said, included 12 million metric tons of purchases of U.S. soybeans in the current year and 25 million metric tons in each of the next 3 years. There was a lot of vagueness about whether that meant calendar year or marketing year. This new agreement, we'll see if the, how they live up to it. But according to the White House, it includes $17 billion worth of ag commodities per calendar year, it looks like, above and beyond the agreed upon soybean purchases from that October agreement. So that would seem to suggest that we will still see the 25 million metric tons purchased each year of the next 3 years of U.S. soybeans if they would hold to that agreement. And on top of that, another $17 billion worth of other ag commodities. So we'll have to see how that plays out going forward. But will China buy the 25 million metric tons? I've been skeptical per year going forward the next 3 years. I've been skeptical along that would happen. However, this helps reinforce that a bit more. And the fact that President Trump says that he and President Xi may meet three more times yet this year in various locations, the more times they meet, the greater the odds that he's going to hold China's feet to the fire on following through with this. And that got supported by some pretty weak retail sales data that came out of China this morning, in addition to some weak economic data that came out last week. So it would appear that China has incentive here to try to maintain some cooperation from the United States so that we can help give a boost to their economy as well. So this is something that was priced into the markets overnight, or at least partially so, with a sharp increase in grain and oilseed prices. Anticipating this, it doesn't mean that we go straight up from here by any means, but I think it is, again, this kind of, even though we have a lot of unknowns here, it makes traders reluctant to build short positions in these commodities right now. As we go forward, we anticipate a crop progress report this afternoon is going to show the crops are still going into ground in fast order. Once emergence hits 50%, then we'll start getting crop condition ratings, and that'll become a significant focus of these markets through the summer. That combined with what evidence we have of China actually buying and following through on this agreement. But after a big sell-off last week on disappointment that ag wasn't specifically mentioned in any big trade deals while President Trump was in Beijing, the White House gave new life to the markets over the weekend, and we're starting this week off on a big positive note in the grain and oil seeds. Keep in mind that we still have the strong biofuel program that's going to be underpinning our oil seeds as well this year. Makes weather that much more important as we go through the U.S. growing season in the months ahead. Although to this point, there is no significant weather story. One may develop as we go forward, but one is not present currently.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The way you view trends in land values influences every major decision on your farm. That's not just about buying or renting land. It's showing up in how you think about risk, investment timing, and even your outlook for the next year.
Dr. Michael Langemeyer is director of the Center for Commercial Agriculture at Purdue University. Also leads the effort for the Purdue University CME Ag Economy Barometer.
Recent Ag Economy Barometer results continue to show that overall, producer sentiment remains relatively stable. But more interestingly is what's happening beneath the headlines, beneath the surface, if you will. When producers are grouped by their farmland value expectations over the next year, a clear split emerges. Some expect land values to increase, others expect them to decline, and even though both groups are operating in the same farm economy with similar interest rates, input costs, and policy uncertainty, their outlooks and decisions look very different. One of the clearest differences show up in financial expectations. Producers who expect higher land values tend to report stronger expectations for their own financial performance over the next year. They're also more optimistic about current conditions on their farms. On the other hand, producers expecting lower land values are noticeably more cautious, more pessimistic with respect to their financial performance. They're less confident in near-term financial performance and less positive about current conditions. So land value expectations aren't just about land. They're closely tied to overall confidence in the farm business. We also saw a sharp difference in investment behavior. Farmers expecting lower land values are much more likely to view now as a good time to make capital investments, whether that's machinery, buildings, or expansion. In contrast, farmers expecting higher land values are more open to investment, even in a high-cost environment. So those that are fairly pessimistic with respect to land values are not expected to make as many capital investments, while those that are more optimistic are more likely to make capital investments. That gap matters because what farmers decide to invest in today doesn't just affect this year. It carries forward into how the farms perform down the road. What we're seeing is two different responses to the same economic conditions, one more defensive and one more growth-oriented. When we ask producers what they think is influencing farmland values in the area, the answers also differ. Those expecting lower land values tend to point to net farm income. That likely reflects pressure on margins and profitability concerns. Meanwhile, those expecting higher land values are more likely to point to alternative investments, things like financial markets or other asset classes competing for capital. So one group is focused on farm income fundamentals, while the other is looking more broadly at relative investment returns. Across both groups, high input costs remain the top concern, but the intensity of that concern is higher among farmers expecting weaker land values. We also see difference in broader outlook. Those more optimistic about land values tend to be slightly more positive about the overall direction of the U.S. economy, and interestingly, livestock producers make up a larger share of the more optimistic group, which may reflect differences in income stability across sectors. The livestock sector, quite frankly, is doing quite a bit better than the crop sector currently. So what does this mean for your operation? Land values aren't just a market number. They're tied closely to how you're thinking about risk, cash flow, and whether now is the right time to invest or hold back. It's whether your decisions are being driven by your own farm numbers or by what you think the market is going to do next.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today, purplewave.com.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
There's a number of different flies. They tend to peak at certain times of the year.
Oklahoma State beef breeding specialist, Dr. Mark Johnson.
Whether it's horn flies, stable flies, house flies, horse flies, we deal with all of them, and they impact beef production. It is estimated, and this number's a little out of date, so it might even be higher now, that we knocked the door of $2 billion that horn flies alone cost beef production. Horn fly is a type of fly that takes blood meals off cattle, comes down from the top of their shoulders, works their way down potentially to the belly. They have about 25 blood meals a day. They can be a significant source of irritation and just robbing productivity in cow-calf operations. We're going to see reduced weaning weights as a result of these pests, actual lessening milk production, and then the fly load on calves as well create extra problems. Stable flies. Stable flies tend to peak this time of year as we get into really hot temperatures and consecutive days of over 90 degrees in the summer. They'll tend to decrease, then they'll bounce back as we get into August and September a lot of times. We're standing here taping today in front of a hay ring. It is interesting. If we think of a typical hay ring and the wasted hay that stands around that after a rain, the moisture that catches holds that moisture, we can see 60,000 stable flies a week result from one hay ring and something like this. How do we avoid that? Well, we get it cleaned up as soon as possible. And here we are kind of in a precarious time. We're still feeding hay in a lot of cases. You'll notice a lot of cattle when they come up to the hay ring to eat, stomping their legs. We probably got stable flies biting the legs of those cattle, causing irritation. And we ask ourselves the question, is there enough green grass that the cattle don't want to go to the hay ring to eat? Or is it just a matter of those stable flies being there to irritate them as they do? So things like that, whether we drag a harrow through it, pick it up, put it in a manure spreader and get it spread out, any of that stuff we can do to get nesting areas like this cleaned up, we want to tackle that as soon as possible. So other things we can do to control fly populations, in addition to cleaning up hay feeding areas around a hay ring, we want to start thinking about insecticides that can be used. There's a number of ways to go about using insecticides, whether it's a pour on, whether it is putting it on a back rub that cattle will use or be forced to use, whether it is an insecticide impregnated ear tag. We want to look at labels of these different products and the way we go about this, potentially rotate products through the ears in order to avoid immunity in fly populations. But we want to get started on a lot of those things now, if not even earlier. A question that we've had in the past, fly wasp or fly predators, a type of wasp that actually eats fly larvae, can be effective in controlling certain types of flies, probably more so stable flies than horn flies, but you've got to take a look to see if that is going to be cost effective based on the size of your operation and the sheer amount of quantity of those that you may need to get out. So start thinking about insecticides and a way to effectively get those on cattle to control fly populations, sprayed on, poured on, back rubs, or in an ear tag itself. Clean up areas where flies may nest. Look at other things that might be a solution. But the bottom line is we need to take action now to save profitability and control fly populations to the extent possible.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.